Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
I'm your host, Don McGuire. We got a hell of a show for you tonight. But first and foremost, I want to pay special thanks to Lee Greenwood, a dear friend of mine and kind of like family to me, for letting me use his copywritten music on my show. You know, this country is in a great deal of turmoil right now. It's dark times. I'm 56 years old. I've never walked down this path. All I could say to my listeners and people joining the show for the first time is, be appreciative of life. Be grateful for each and every moment that we have, because in life nothing is truly promised to us. You know, tonight I got a legend of a man on the show with me, mutually hosting tonight. I got the one and only, the polar bear, Mr. Paul Verlins. What's happening, Paul?
Hey, Don, how you doing, man? I'm embracing your message of being grateful for what I got, and for what's been going on. I've been very blessed with being able to get through this financially and just get through this thing. So, yeah, now just feeling what you're saying there.
Yeah, you know, life is a thing that I think too many of us take for granted. With that being said, I got a tremendous guest that I'm going to bring on. I'm going to let him pronounce his – I'm going to try to pronounce his last name. I'm going to butcher it. But that's all good. It won't be the first time I butchered it. It's a live radio show. We're out on over 122 FM stations worldwide. If you're listening on iHeart, Univision, or any other aspect, please download. The more downloads we get, the more airtime we get played next week in succession. With that being said, I want to welcome Peter James Stananik. Did I say it right, Pete? Peter, you there?
Peter Stanonis.
Paul, are you there?
Super close.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
I was super close. I'm having a hard time hearing you, bud.
Oh, can you hear me?
How about now?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Yeah, you are super close. Stanonik.
Stanonik. Hey.
Yes, sir.
Going here. You know, we were talking about before we went live, I'm transparent. You know, I kind of had a feeling I knew you in life, and we talked about it, and we realized right before the show that I met you through a tremendous group of people, my brothers.
Indeed.
My brothers of glory, one of my favorites of all time, the one and only Mr. Tim Elliott and his wonderful father, John Elliott. And
John.
Introduced me to you. Yeah.
Indeed.
4.5, huh?
Yep, that was about 4.5 years ago, yes, sir.
Yeah, and life has been great for you, bro. What was the experience like for you in Glory Kickboxing? I'm not even going to try to emulate your record because, as with Paul, if you try to look at your record, there's 90 different records out there for you. So what was
yeah.
your stint like in Glory, and what did it mean to you to get that opportunity and that promotion?
Man, that was a very excellent question. It meant everything. That was my goal. So a lot of MMA fighters, their pinnacle is UFC or ONE FC or Bellator. But as a kickboxer, Glory has always been the goal. And when Glory came out about 7 or 8 years ago, don't quote me, I said, that's what I wanted to do. That was my goal. And 2 years ago, it happened. I was blessed with the opportunity. Not only that, but my first fight within the promotion of Glory, I got to fight in my home city. So, I mean, we're talking about blessed. I just felt extremely blessed. And so, I took off running. I won my first fight against undefeated Keeman Diop, who's an awesome fighter. Then I fought Vince McGinnis in Orlando, won that, and then was scheduled to fight for the number 8 spot in the world against Justin Houghton, J-Ho, and he pulled a couple hours, maybe 12 hours before the fight. So it was an awesome stint. It was a goal. I had reached it, and once you reach a goal, you try to make another one, and you reach that one. So, but my time with Glory was just—it was I don't know, man. It was—it felt great. It felt great to say I was with the best kickboxing promotion in the world. Ended up being 7-0, and that and as Paul knows, you too, Don, undefeated records don't mean too much. 9 times out of 10, if you're undefeated, you haven't fought anyone. So I don't really go into records, man. I just, I just go out there, throw down, and, if God wants me to win that night, then I win. But, if I don't, well, I'm living so I can fight again. Glory not shut down, but I don't know if anyone else has noticed, but Glory's been letting their top fighters go. They let Marat Gagorian, the lightweight champion, go. Anissa Kim, she's the 125 champ. Everyone's leaving Glory right now, so they're not really keeping us too active, with the coronavirus. Being a professional fighter, you're extremely lucky if you get that opportunity to fight. So Glory just haven't been to the States for a while, so I was approached to fight MMA again, and I was like, yep, let's get it. So, but I love Glory. If they ever pick back up, I would love to go back to kickboxing instantly. So
that's a tremendous promotion. My homie Charles Rockstar Rodriguez, he fights in Glory. He comes on the show.
We fought in the same ward. He's a good guy.
The only Glory fighter ever to rub baby oil on his chest during his live promo. So come on, man. Hey, you should see the video
good.
That he did for my radio show. I'll have to send
it
to
cool.
you. You'll
yeah,
die.
Be cool. Yeah.
But
he's a character, man.
He truly is. During these dark times, bro, one thing I've taken away from the sport, my 24 years in it, Paul has vastly more years in it, and I'll let Paul ask you a question in a second. But during these dark times, one thing I've always taken away from the sport, and people don't get to see this, the brotherhood, the relationships.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, and we can deal with certain people like me and Tim Elliott, me and James Krause, me and Zach Cummings, and you establish a base, a part, you know, I guess it's a family away from a family. So in these dark times, what has those relationships meant to you? You there? I think we might have lost him. Are you still there, Paul?
I'm still here.
Hi, James, I can't hear you. I guess I could try to recall him. Let me try to recall him and see what happens. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Stranger things happen. Hey, it's live radio. We got to roll with the punches.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It says it's dialing, so we'll see what's happening. Well, he's in Texas, so.
Yeah.
Well, let's try one more.
Yeah, I was really wanting to hear.
You'll get him.
What the difference of the training was going to be like for shifting from, you know, the kickboxing specific.
We'll get him, bro. Yeah. Not sure what's going on. It's not on our end. That's obvious.
Yeah. I wonder if his Bluetooth went dead.
That's what I'm wondering. It's all right. We'll try him again in a second here. You know, that's the thing with live shows, and people don't really understand. You got to be able to keep the show going. I'm totally live, so when my show is going, I'm going to have hiccups. I'm going to have atrocities. You know, it's sad that young man is a very good speaker, and that happened. We'll try one more time, and I'll just hit him and tell him to call back in, I guess.
Yeah, you know.
Because I know it's not my board.
Hello?
Hey, we got you.
Hey, I saw Huntington Beach, and I was like, you know what? I don't know anyone from California.
that's okay, bro. Yeah, sometimes it patches through to different studios because iHeart gets over inundated. But let's pick up on our question because I don't want to lose too much time in the interview as we are a live show. During these dark times, and I'll surmise it really quick, during these dark times we've created relationships in the sport. What have them relationships meant to you, and how have they helped you cope through these last 7 months?
It's been optimum. Without them, not only can you not train, right, because you need these people to get better, but, I mean, like, outside of the gym, everyone's going through.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, New York's calling me again. It's paramount. It's needed. It's a necessity. Because, I mean, fighting right now is second. Like, we're a fighter, but it's second right now. Health and your family's got to come first. So those relationships outside of the gym mean more than what, you know, inside of the gym. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I truly do. You know, I look at this sport, and I'm like you. I haven't worked in 7 months. I was supposed to work in 2 days for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships. We'll see if that still comes through. I don't know. I don't want to be in quarantine. I don't want to shoot, you know, be locked up for 5 days to shoot one night. Nah, I'm good.
Oh, man.
I'm going to pass the mic to Mr. Paul Verlins and let him ask you a couple questions, and then I'll come back and ask you a few more, James.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, what I was really wondering is changing up from kickboxing to MMA, I'm assuming you're going to be, there's just like a lot more bases to touch from ground fighting, you know, the intermediate area to the striking outside. How does that change, how do you feel about changing up your training for it? How does that, come pretty smoothly to you, or are you concerned that because you got to cover so many different areas, it's going to take you longer to prepare, try to prepare so many different aspects? What do you think?
If you want to make it as simple and easy as possible, because I mean, that's how I want a life to be. Fighting is, it's adapting and overcoming, right? Even inside kickboxing and Muay Thai, there are different styles. And all MMA is just adding more styles. So ultimately, fighting is fighting. If you fight, you have to adapt and overcome. That's all it is. I have to be able to stay coachable. I have to want to learn new things. I have to keep an open mind. The strikes themselves, it's not too different. Maybe in kickboxing, on my lead hook, I can pivot more with my lead foot than I can in MMA. But essentially, fighting is fighting. And if you fight, this is your life. I mean, life is fighting. You have to adapt to certain situations and then overcome it. It's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. Now, MMA fighting, it's just I know who my opponent is. I know when I'm going to fight. I know what I have to do. It's a lot easier. You know, I try not to complicate it, you know.
Now,
makes it easier
for
me.
And I think, you know, I want to see how you come at it, but it sounds like you've got that down real right. And it's true. Fighting is fighting. And you know, we're all making transitions because of this COVID situation. So, I mean,
indeed.
I think your attitude is pretty applicable from fighting to life to getting to these struggles we're all facing now too. It's all about being adaptable and knowing your opponent and, you know, so,
right.
You know, that was hot stuff.
Yeah, it just makes everything easy. I like what the terminology Krauss often uses is KISS, keep it simple, stupid. You know, there's no point in making things harder than they already are, you know. Go out there, fight, and fight your ass off. And that's, you know, essentially that's all we can do. Just don't back down. Mm-hmm. Just keep throwing. You get hit, you keep throwing. I mean, that's life. That's fighting.
Right.
I mean,
No doubt. No doubt. No, I think that's good. That's good. That's good knowledge to share. Because, I mean, coming from back in my time, we didn't have time to even know who we were fighting. And we didn't even know maybe what styles we were going to be up against. You just had to go in there and just throw.
Y'all didn't even have
go.
Weight classes, man. Y'all didn't have gloves,
yeah,
rules,
we
any of that. That
we
is fighting,
yeah.
Fighting. That, man, that's so pure. That, excuse me, you grow up watching
but
that
I'll,
type
I'll,
of
I'll
fight.
Say
yeah,
that,
I'm 32.
The attitude you're bringing and the answer you gave me there before shows me that you are cut from the same sort of cloth, and I think that you would have been very comfortable in that period of time. I think you could have handled it. I don't think a lot of guys now could handle the challenges that were there.
Yeah.
Three fights to one night, no rules, not hungry or against, blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
it takes a different mindset. You know?
Indeed, indeed. Y'all set the tone. I'm 32, man. When I was a fan, I was 13, 14. MMA wasn't what it is now. And so I grew up watching, you know, the earlier shows of MMA. And so it was a lot more raw. I like that raw feeling. I like that real rawness, you know. Like, it's a lot deeper than just the surface, I guess, you know. You got to dig deep. You really figure out who you are.
It's more of the natural state. Yeah, absolutely.
Indeed, yes, sir.
And, you know, You get it. You get it. Like a lot of these new guys, what we did is almost like a legend that they don't even hardly know about and stuff. But you know,
yeah.
But I think your attitude and the knowledge of and being comfortable that sort of thing is gonna help you transition so smoothly into the MMA from what you're doing and transition or whatever you need to do,
Sir.
That kind of attitude is gonna take you through. You know.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it.
That's that.
You know, Peter.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, it's tremendous because here you are 7-0 in Glory Kickboxing, and I love your thought process on records don't matter because they truly don't. You know, it could be anybody's night in the cage or in the ring. Whoever is the most hungriest. But you got an opportunity not only to fight in Bellator, which, you know, is a tremendous opportunity just for anybody. And you're going to be making your debut against Raymond Daniels, but you got signed to a multi-fight deal. How much did that mean to you, Peter, going into this, knowing that you haven't really been able to fight for the last 7 months? This is a huge opportunity for you, not only to go in there and beat Raymond Daniels, but to show Bellator Nation, the promotion, in the world that you deserved a multi-fight contract with Bellator. So when you sit back and you look at the whole situation, what does this mean for you and your family?
I'm going to be okay. You know, like, I think every parent, their wish is to know when they pass that their kids are going to be okay, you know? And that constantly stays in my mind. Like, my dad and just knowing, I want to make him feel secure. I want him to know that his son is going to be okay. And so signing a multi-fight contract with Bellator, you know, for at least the next X amount of months or years, I can make him feel like things are going to be okay, you know. I'm going to be okay. I'll be okay. I'm a fighter, period. But now I get to, like, I can buy my mom a car. She hasn't had a car in over 20 years, you know? Like, I can get my mom a car. That feels good, you know? I get to do what I love, and I get to pay. I get paid for it, you know? So I'm good. But now it's like, you know, because during camps, you have to borrow and take from people, and it's like a very selfish – it's like a really selfish feeling. And, you know, for the past 7 months, if you're a professional fighter, well, you've been taking. And so now it's like Bellator has been – they've given me the opportunity to actually give back, you know. And it feels good. I don't care what anyone says. It feels good genuinely. So I feel blessed.
Let me ask you.
They could have picked anyone.
They could have. See, I love you, man. This is – I mean, you're spot on because this is what you made a point there that most people don't realize. They could pick anybody.
Yes, sir.
And see, the tremendous part about that is most people don't realize there's tens of thousands of fighters in this country.
Yes, sir.
And they chose you. When you sit back, bro, and you made that comment about wanting to take care of your family, wanting to buy your mother a car. When you sit back now and you look in the mirror, you see the growth of a man.
Oh,
you see the growth in humility. What does that reflection mean to you?
It means I've turned a leaf, turned a corner. I have now found out what true manhood is. It's not the clout that you have. It's not the followers that you have. It's like what you do for other people, simply put. And so, not to be narcissistic, but I feel like I've became a man. Like I can now go into a relationship and feel secure in a relationship because I can provide. It feels really good.
especially after you've been doing it for 11 years and you question if you should keep doing this. Your parents keep helping. You know, they love you. They want to support, but they want to see their kid thrive. And now after like 11 years, it's actually happening, you know? So that just feels good. Indeed. Very, very.
You know, the thing that, you know, my son's 34. And, you know, I look at you and I heard your answers to Paul and how you articulated your answers to me. You're tremendous parents and you're a tremendous warrior. You look at the sport, how it really should be defined and looked at. What, I hate doing this, but because I know you're not going to talk crap, and I don't want to be a standardized Wikipedia show or whatever, but I want the Bellator listeners to know, what does Peter James stand? I'm going to butcher it again. Stanovica.
good. He's super close.
You know, what do you plan to bring to Bellator Nation? For the fans, for the people, for the promotion against Raymond Daniels.
I fight. I fight. I come forward. I throw heat with everything I throw. There's no jabs. I don't throw jabs. I don't throw anything without ill intent. I fight for 15 minutes. Or 9 minutes kickboxing, doesn't matter. I throw hard every shot. And these people, I know, you know, people can't go to these shows, but imagine a Bellator ticket at $65. Average human being in America makes, what, $8? They get paid $64 a day. So if you're taking, excuse me, if these people are pretty much literally taking food off their plate, their table, you know, away from their kids, I think it's up to us to make them feel okay about spending so much money on a ticket by going out there and fighting. Like, you, people say you don't go for the knockout, but you do. Yeah, you're supposed to set it up, but everyone wants the knockout. We want the knockout. That's what people pay to see. And that's what I do.
Money shot.
I mean, all of my finishes. Yeah. That money shot. I call it the kill shot. So all of my wins have been by knockout, one-shot knockouts. There's no TKOs, and even I'm coming from 45 to 70. I still, it's not even a think. I know I hit hard, so for the Bellator fans, they can expect heat with every shot. Ooh, whew, those type of reactions, indeed, because that's what they pay to see. You know, I'm out there to fight, man. I'm not here to do anything else but to fight and entertain, you know. But fighting comes first. My fighting entertains. I mean, you throw heat with every shot. It's entertaining, period, you know. I just feel like being technical and throwing heat with it, I mean, people deserve to see that, you know.
Yeah, give the fans with it. What they're looking for, what they pay for. Saeeda Ward said the best one in his fight with Brandon Ward. Are we going to sit here and hug and dance, or are we going to stand in the middle and bang it out, bro?
Yeah, tuck that chin, shell up, and throw.
Yeah, and they sure did. Saeed came up short, but you know what? He didn't go out like a bitch. He went out like a man.
Right. Yeah.
And
straight up.
That's what I love about this sport is the humility, the camaraderie, the brotherhood. You know, I'm going to have to kind of wrap things up here in a second, but I'm going to send it to Paul Verlins, let him ask you one more question, and then I'll come back, and then we'll kind of wrap things up, brother. Paul?
Yeah, well, this is more of a shared statement with you. You know, I've been giving a lot of the guys a hard time lately about how the ladies have been really putting the fights, like putting the, like fighting, like how you're talking about fighting, how you fight, you know, like putting it all
right
on the line without pulling back and hugging and all this stuff. And it's nice to hear then see that coming from the guy's side, because like the ladies have been coming with it. So do you feel it's partly part of your responsibility to represent for the guys, show the fans out there that the guys can bang just as hard as these girls do? I have some weird question, but I honestly have been in the girls' corner lately, going, man, I've just been so impressed. But it's nice to hear that that passion for the hot stuff is still out there with the guys. You know.
Oh, so yes, sir.
You know, heck of what that ladies out there. That's cool. And I'm excited to watch your fight. I'm gonna watch some of your fights and watch whatever you got coming up. And I know you got a new fan. Polar Bear's a new fan for you.
Oh man, I appreciate that. I really do. I seriously do, man. You're a legend, brother. Dude, you and the generation, y'all set the tone, you know. Without y'all, we wouldn't be doing this. We'd be doing construction or teachers or something, you know. So I appreciate you, seriously,
man. Hold on. Ditto. I'm old enough, I can say that now.
Well, I might be older than you.
I'm an old man. Oh, my God. You're talking about me. All right.
I'm 56, bro, so I might be the oldest man in the room. I'm not sure, but I still act like I'm 20. You know, Peter, I don't think a half an hour is a show that is fitting for you. I think you're an articulate young man that I need to tell your story. So I'd love to have you back on a future episode and dedicate an hour to you, because I truly believe you.
Absolutely.
You deserve that.
I'd love to be at that show. I'd love to be on that show, too.
Yeah, right.
Man, anytime, Don. Anytime.
You know, I think it's tremendous you get this opportunity. I think this is an aspect for you to prove to yourself. You've already proven yourself in kickboxing. You've done well in MMA. Why not come back and show the world a second time around what you're truly made
of?
Yes,
sir.
You've grown since then. You've matured.
Indeed.
You know, and life has taught us all a new lesson. We have to learn to walk with humility and pride. We have to learn to take away from the indecent indignities that are served and unjustly given to people in life. And people, as you heard with Peter, there's not an aspect of hate that needs to be a part of this country. We can all come together as brothers and sisters and live as one. You know, the beauty of this sport is on the show right now with me as my guest. This young man is proving to the world that don't be defined by society. Define society. You know, you're a tremendous young man with great heart. I wish you the best of luck in your opportunity and those who truly deserve it. I think you're a man.
Thank you very much, bros.
Oh, no problem, bro. I think you've earned every step of the way in your career. With that being said, it's truly been an honor to have you on the show. I'm going to pass the mic to you.
It's my pleasure.
If you have any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything that you'd like to add, the floor is yours, brother.
I want to thank my dad. My dad's been like there. He's supported me, even though he knows that I probably could put energy into something else that's more lucrative, less bodily harm. But, you know, he's been supporting me for the past 11 years. And, like, you know, honestly, no cap, no bullshit. I really couldn't do this without him. So my dad, Bobby Peak. Bobby Peak is my Muay Thai coach. He's been there with me for the past 6 years, and he lets me be me. So I got to thank Bobby and his family. Mittman Joe, on the drop of a dime, he's flying out to the Bellator with me. And again, with the whole Corona thing, it's kind of tough. So, yeah, man, I just want to thank anyone that supports me or sends a text saying good luck. Yeah, it's nothing but love, man. It's nothing but love.
Unreal, nothing but love. Now, where can my listeners that are just now hearing about you because, bro, they need to go watch your tapes in glory. And then they'll go like, holy crap. But where can people find you on social media? Because I know you're going to do the same thing in Bellator, right? I could already feel it. So where can people find you on social media, brother?
You can find me on Instagram as Daronin, DA_RONIN_, as in a Ronin. Or you can just find me on Facebook at Peter James Denonic V. YouTube, my fights. My kickboxing fights are on UFC Fight Pass. So not too hard to find. I think I'm the only Peter James Denonic V in the world. So.
Right?
I'll send you right after the show.
That just makes you that much more rare, bro. And
indeed.
I hope with all intents and purposes that you come into Bellator the same way you did into glory and the same
Thank
way you did into life, with honor, respect, and dignity. Brother, you're a true class act. Like I said, I can't wait to have you back on for an hour episode because I'm gonna get real Barbara Walters on your ass then, bro. We're going to break it down and let people know who you're really about. That's what my show usually does, but, you know, I know with the time constraints with the airways tonight with RNC and all that other crap going on, I'm a limited amount of time on live radio tonight, so next time we'll make it a little bit longer. God bless
you,
brother.
Yes,
I can't wait to see you at Bellator.
Thank you.
Go do your thing, bro.
Of course.
Do your thing.
Thank
God
you so much,
you.
Sir. You have a wonderful night.
Oh, you too, brother. God bless.
You got it.
Paul is one hell of a kid, but we're running a little bit behind. We're going to bring on the one and only Mr. Christian Prenup. This is where we're going to have some fun.
Hello.
Welcome to the Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire. How are you doing tonight, Mr. Prenup?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. We're live. Dean had something come up, but, you know, I pulled another rabbit out of my hat, and I made a special show for you, bro. I brought No Holds Bars from the early days of the USC, the one and only, the polar bear, Mr. Paul Verlins. Paul, why don't you...
Oh, hey, right on, man.
Yeah, bro, I do it.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, Paul? How you doing, man?
I'm good. I don't know how you got a polar bear out of a hat, but he did it, so...
He's
gone for it.
God's the man.
Hey, Paul, I'm going to go ahead and let you start the questioning on this interview, Paul.
Yeah. I was checking out some of your background stuff, and I like that you've had a lot of involvement with the women fighting with the women fighting more and more, and you know, I mean, I gotta be honest with you. There was a time when I was fighting myself that I never would have believed that women could do what they're doing now. Like I underestimated women, and I'm the first to admit I was dead wrong, and to the point now where I actually have more faith in buying a pay-per-view that have women on the card more than an all-male card, because the ladies they put it all out. They don't hold back, you know. What I want to ask you is, did you always recognize that women would be this great at fighting? Or did you
turn
that corner to?
Well, I'll tell you, man, Paul. It's a great question, man. I really appreciate it. And so how I got involved in women's combat sports was in my role as I worked as an entertainment director at a casino in California, outside Fresno, and there was a local gal named Jennifer Elkhorn. Jennifer All-American Elkhorn, really, really strong, powerful puncher. And, you know, we were doing boxing shows at the casino, and everyone said, you know, you have to get Jennifer on. We got her on. I mean, she was a media darling. She had played like softball at Fresno State University, and her husband was on the SWAT department and stuff, and like she just like half of Fresno automatically just showed up, and from there it was sort of like, wow, okay, when I saw Jennifer perform in person, because at the end of the day, like, promoting and putting fights on it's a business. So, you know, you want to balance like talented fighters, but also, you know, folks that are going to be commercially viable, you know, they're going to put butts in seats or what have you. You know, from Jennifer, it was like a light went off. So you start trying to look for opponents for her. And then you just uncover all these talented women in boxing. And then, as we got into MMA, I mean, there were so many tough girls that Aaron Tohill and, I mean, there's just so many, you know, but what I'm doing is I'm talking like back when we were doing the WEC and stuff.
They bang hard. I mean, I literally had the epiphany of like, holy shit, I had this all wrong. Women bang hard, and it seems like they're not as worried about like, you know, like, oh, what if I look bad doing this, or I'm scared to put too much on the line. You know what I mean? Like, they just bang, and they just leave it all in there. And it's fun to watch. It is worth it.
They've always been some of the most exciting fights, and I think whether it's they feel like maybe they have a little something extra to prove, I don't know what it is, but they're all action.
Yeah, it's awesome. It is awesome, and I'm glad to see it, because I think it brings, honestly, I think there's a lot of guys out there that are seeing it and meeting the challenge and seeing that, hey, you know, we gotta, you know, you can't get outdone by the, you know, you gotta at least gotta be 50-50 on this one, obviously. I think it's good for everybody in general. I think it's just a great thing. So I'm glad that you had a hand in helping that along its way, you know, helping that thing develop, because it really does add a more depth and more, it makes it more of a community sort of event, you know what I mean? The ladies are represented, and represented well. And, it's a great thing. So I just want to say, you know, thanks for being a part of making that happen, helping that happen.
Oh, yeah, it was always my honor, man. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
You know, Christian, you're such a laid-back dude. That's one thing I love about you, homie, is you're straight real. You're chill. But me, you, a couple other people, we kind of started something a little ways back, you know, with food and critiquing each other and having food wars on social media. You know, and out of the woodworks, I started noticing the creations of different products, the different dishes. You know, you're one that used the coronavirus quarantine time to the best extent. You created some miraculous-looking food, bro. So to the point that I don't even post food pictures anymore. What was it in you that made you decide to take to the culinary side when others were woe is me? You took to the culinary side, the lighter aspect of life, and you started sharing a different side of you. What was it that inspired you to do so, sir?
That's a beautiful question, dude. And first of all, I'm gonna tell you, man, you throw down, dude, because your food looks amazing. Dino's food looks amazing. Who else throws them in there? Randy? I love food, man. I just my love for food, my love for cooking, was growing up and basically growing up in my grandmother's kitchen, bro. You know, with my grandmother and my mother. My grandmother was always cooking. Like, I'm half Italian, half Native American, and I kind of grew up more with my mother's side of the family, Italians, for the most part. And, you know, like the majority of the year, you know what I mean? Like you go visit your dad for the summer and that kind of stuff. But, it's just, my grandparents had a pizzeria when I was really young, like really, really young, like 4 or 5 years old. But I have like faint memories of the pizzeria. And, I just always thought it was fun. You know, I think it's, I like to feed people. I'm a giver. So I like to be able to cook and, like, you know, if people are over or whatever, you know, I like to make sure, you know, food makes people happy. And I like to make people happy, man, because what the hell, if I'm going to go through this life, like, I want to go through, like, everyone just, let's have fun, man. Let's be happy and get along and, you know, as best we can. And, so that's kind of like where the bug got me. And then as I got older, I'll be honest with you, man, I realized if you cook, women love it. So I was let's do this, man.
Yeah.
I was like, let's go. I'm not even ashamed to tell you right now that I started to get really into cooking and creative and stuff when I was like, wow, this works. Like, this girl's really hot and she wants to go out again. So, and that's when
hey,
I was really young. And then I got married and I was married for many years.
Yeah. Hey, bro, there's no wrong in earning brownie points and not letting them know that we enjoy it, right?
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. It's relaxing. It's you know, the other thing too, man. Here's the other thing: is like, it's to me, it's art. Like when you're mixing, like the flavors and the textures and the colors and all and the consistencies and all these different things. And I like that. Like I feel like I can play around with that and see things, but I can't dance. I can't really draw or paint. I try to, but I suck. I can't sing, but I feel like from an artistic perspective, my wheelhouse is food, you know? So I do that and, you know, I'll have a glass of wine or a beer or something and, you know, put some music on and just relax in the kitchen and cook. And it's a nice way to kind of decompress.
Yeah. You know, it's for many years, I've loved to cook and so there's always been, I don't know, in culture there's always a stigmata, you know, that, oh man, he must be wussified if he cooks. But now you see this new trend of men emerging that we're great cooks and we're not afraid to share it. You know, it's funny, the first picture that I ever posted of some tacos, I think it's sitting at 450,000 views on Google, and it's just crazy. It blows my mind that you could post a picture of food and get a 500,000, you know, likes on it. It's like, well, this is kind of cool. But then you add in the camaraderie of a bunch of bros, and then it just turns monotony into fun.
It really does, man.
Yeah, it really
does.
What I dig about it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned the pictures and stuff. So, like, I'm pretty active on Instagram too, and I like that. So that's where I put majority of my food pics on there, and then a lot of them I'll share to Facebook too, most of them. But I it's really cool, man. Like, I'm connecting with all these people all over the world, and you know, I'll try to get real creative sometime. Not lately, but I used to be real creative with hashtags to try to, like, you know, hit some different eyeballs and stuff. And you know, I've made all these little connections all over the world through food, through cooking, and, you know, sharing ideas and, like, real legit, like, you know, I like to cook, but I'm just a home cook. Like, 9 out of 10 times, the stuff I make looks like shit and tastes like shit. But that 1 out of 10 times is miraculous, you know? And, but I got, like, legit chefs and stuff, like, messaging me going, hey, that looks really good. You know, here's, you know, and here's some ideas or whatever. That's just kind of cool, man.
Yeah. Well, we all got to learn and experience a different side of ourselves, because none of us have ever walked on this path that we're walking right now. So I think, you know, instead of being the Debbie Downer or the having a bummer attitude about it, you know, you got to find different ways to project yourself and to look into yourself, and you discover many things. You know, I tell you, you know, I found out that I don't watch TV. I don't do very many things. So without my every weekend exploration into people world, I'm a pretty boring person. So I love my show, but I love cooking even that much more. And hell, the old lady gets off my back, and like you said, it brings joy to everybody. Food is a tremendous thing. You know, the sport is kind of having evolving lately, and you know, I see a trend that I'm kind of digging, and I want to get your perspective on it. You know,
sure.
I see a lot of these young and up-and-comers that are brutal, like the guy we just had on, Peter James Stanonik, yeah. Who's getting his Bellator debut, just signed him to a multi-fight deal. But he was 7-0 in Glory Kickboxing. Tremendous, tremendous guy. You know, you look at him, you look at the style bender, you look at a lot of these young and up-and-coming fighters that are just devastating this sport. What do you think has transpired over the last couple years that now we're seeing these young warriors that we've never seen before, that have now proposed a formidable aspect in the sport? I mean, you got to admit, bro, there's some guys that have come up lately that are just mind-blowing.
They are. They're very just very unique in terms of their style. And, you know, this would be something too for Paul. So kind of what I think is, sorry, hold on 1 second. I'm about to walk upstairs. My son broke his arm 2 weeks ago in a
skateboarding accident,
compound fracture. And, he just had the stitches out today. And I'm downstairs. So sometimes he calls me when they need something. But so here's what I think is, I think in terms of MMA and like the evolution of fighters, my opinion is, in the 70s and 80s and things like that, when kids were growing up, well, MMA was around, you know, wasn't around before in the 90s, whatever. It was like boxing. So people wanted to be the next, or karate. Everyone wanted to be the next, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard or Tommy Hearns or Bruce Lee. And but now, as MMA's, you know, been around for what year is this now? 2020. I'm trying to forget what year this is.
Right.
26 years.
Yeah. It's like I feel like you got kids now, that young guys that are fighting now, the style benders and stuff, that, you know, they were born into MMA. Like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, they're young enough to where they grew up already wanting to be the next Anderson Silva, you know, or the next whoever. But they're able to take it to another level, whether it's the evolution of training or, you know, nutrition and all that stuff. You're just seeing guys that are like bigger, stronger, and faster. It's crazy.
You know, I look at it in a weird way. I'm quirky and eccentric, bro. You already know that. But it's like, I think with anything in life, you know, you look at me and I go out and I take pictures in front of thousands of people. I do a worldwide radio show, and I wanted my son to follow my footsteps. He tried to for a little bit, but it wasn't his thing. He became a world famous DJ. But then you've got those aspects.
Oh, wow.
Those very,
that's awesome, man.
Yeah. But then you get those minute aspects of generational fighter families. And I think what we're seeing now is that culpability from that aspect. You know, let's say, like, you look at the Mayweathers in the boxing world. You know, from that gene pool, it transfers to the next. And I think that's what we're seeing now in the MMA world. I think we're seeing a lot of aspects that have just the genealogy, the thought process. And it's like you said, they're coming up warriors.
Antonio and Antonio Jr., man, the McKees, you know, like, you know, the young man was born into it, you know what I mean, into wrestling and everything, you know, being around and in the gym with his dad while his dad was phenomenal, you know, his dad was such a high level fighter, grappler. I mean, so yeah, no, I agree with you, man.
Yeah. See, I just spoke with him today.
Can I hop on one little thing you said there? You know how the kids are born into this? It made me think, you know what seed in my head when I was a kid? Every Which Way But Loose, Clint Eastwood. That, I used to think Rocky was really the thing, but it was actually, Every Which Way But Loose with Clint Eastwood, where he was a fighter, traveling around fighting bare knuckle. Did you ever see
that? That's right, yeah.
That's the one that got it going in my head. I'm sorry, I just wanted to.
Right on.
Well, it's cool though because what he brought up is like I speak with Antonio McKee just about every day. We're bros in life, but you look at Antonio McKee, you look at Chris Brennan and Lucas Brennan. And it goes on and on. And I've done multiple shows that were father and son in that aspect. But those two, especially the McKees, that created history as the first father and son to win on a fight card, on the same fight card. And I interviewed AJ after that, and I asked him, I said, how hard was it for you seeing your father win? He goes, bro, it made it twice as hard because he won, so now I knew I had to go out there and win.
Right. Pressure was on.
Now this kid's sitting at 16.
You can't let Pop show you up.
Yeah, I can't let Pop show me up at all. But now AJ's sitting at 16-0. He's one fight away from $1 million. And these young kids are hungry. You know, and I think the sport is evolving into if you don't have everything in your corner, you're not going to become something. And I hate to put it that way, but I think James Krause said it the best. You know, to be in this sport and to want to be a champion, you have to really dedicate who you are and give up everything that you know to become that champion. Christian, you've been in the sport a long time. If it wasn't for the WEC and other aspects, many fighters would have never went on to become world champions in this sport. When you look at the aspects that you've put into place in this sport, the fighters that you've adopted and helped correlate their careers, what has been your greatest takeaway in watching the sport evolve and knowing you had a hand in it?
Oh man, that's a deep. That's one of your special questions right there, man. That's a deep one. First and foremost, it's been an honor. It's been an honor to watch the men and women that have competed on the fight card that I've either been a part of or directly or indirectly. It's been an honor to watch them compete and to do what they do. And to put their life on the line. I mean, it takes a certain type of person with a gene that the average person just doesn't have to be able to go in there and do what they do. So, it was always just an honor to watch. My biggest takeaway, man, the growth of the whole sport has just been so crazy to see from like when I first started getting involved. WC was what, like 2001 or something, or
yeah,
something like that. Knowing that just before that, like the first WEC, we actually had Chuck Liddell scheduled to fight. Chuck was going to fight and Gam McGee was in the co-main event. And then, Chuck beat, I think Randleman in Japan. And at that point, then the UFC the WEC guys, Reed and Scott, got a cease and desist letter. But that wasn't that long ago that fighters still kind of weren't, it was more the Wild West, in terms of fighters and who was under contract and who could fight for what promotion and all that kind of stuff. And the money, I remember meeting Chuck Liddell not that long after he had fought Steve Heath, who's from like the Stockton, Central California area, in California, on a very small show at a small tribal casino, and for like maybe $1,500. And then, you know, and that's like 1999 or something, you know. And then to know that like 5 years later what he was making, and but it was just, that was kind of crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The pay's definitely gone up. You know, I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'll pass it back over to Paul, and then we'll kind of start wrapping things up, because I know you got to take care of your son, and it's getting late for you. But, you know, the one thing that I love about this sport is the honor, the humility, and the integrity that the sport has showed, you know, during these dark times. You know, but the sport, you know, has created some aspects that I think were too young or didn't have an understanding truly of where they were going or where they got themselves. As of last Friday, for the second time in his career, Jason Mayhem Miller was arrested again, this time for domestic battery, Grand Theft Auto, and several other felonies. What does it mean for you, Christian, to watch the rise of these legends and then see some of them fall and know that there's nothing the sport or any other aspect can truly do for them? What does it mean for you knowing that you want to help somebody, you give them the benefit of the doubt, and time after time, as with John Jones and now Mayhem Miller, you know, that aspect keeps coming up, and now, unfortunately, he's possibly facing life in prison, as in California, three strikes, three felonies, his life in prison. What does it mean for you knowing that you were a creation of the sport? You played a major contribution to the sport. How does it perplex you seeing fighters like this lose their life to a side that many of us will never understand?
I mean it's extremely, I mean, just so sad and it's horrible to think about it, and to whether you know the people or not, and whether they're fighters or whatever their, you know, their livelihood is, I hope that people would never want to see another person fall on hard times, you know. There's a lot of things in play, I mean, in terms of, you know, where people are, you know, in terms of emotionally or mentally and that kind of stuff. And, you know, just I met Jason a few times, and while he was fighting, I met him on Sunset, a sushi spot in Hollywood, whatever, one night. But he was always, you know, really cool, and I don't know. I know he's got a lot of issues, obviously. And, you know, the other thing, too, sometimes is, you know, fighters kind of, you know, they get that fame. They get that taste of notoriety. And that's like a drug, man. That's like an addiction, you know, hearing your name and walking out in a crowd and signing autographs and all that kind of stuff. And that's hard to give up when that goes away. And then obviously the financial part that may or may not go away depending on, you know, what you did, how, you know, what you may have made. And we all know the average fighter isn't making millions of dollars, you know?
No.
And so what, you know, how are they using, you know, what are they doing with the money? You know what I mean? And maybe they're just breaking even on their fight. Maybe they're even losing on some fights, but, man, you just never want to see anyone. At least I don't. I never want to see anyone, you know, down on their luck, but I also, you know, I also think you got to be able to distinguish between
sometimes bad things and unfortunate things have happened to people, and then sometimes, you know, people bring things upon themselves or their own actions, or and then they have to take responsibility for that, and it sucks, man. And you just hope that they get, you know, the help that they need to be able to get their mind and their body and their soul in order, and to live, you know, in the most, you know, positive and righteous way they can, whatever the situation might be moving forward, you know.
Yeah,
kind of make the best of it.
I think
you know
the quarantine
what I mean?
Didn't help too much. You know, I think the quarantine has played a lot of perplexing issues on many. Bro, I'm going to pass the mic to Paul, let him ask you a couple more questions, and then I'll come back and wrap things up, because I know you got to get, bro.
Okay, no, thanks, man. Thank you.
Hey. Yeah,
hey,
you know, I just kind of, hey, how's it going, bro? Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we can only do so much as we can for somebody, and I think his situation is mental. I think he's got some serious issues that he has to work out, and I think, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think that fighters in general, people that kind of gravitate towards fighting, kind of have a tendency to have a little bit more issues, have some things in there that they struggle with, and those are the kind of things that help them be a great fighter? And in one part of their life, it can be very self-destructive, but in the area of fighting and tapping into very raw animal kind of part of that's what fighting is, it helps them in that area. I mean, do you think that fighters have a higher propensity to have those kind of issues?
In my experience, I would say yes, I do. I do think so. I think that you have some people that, that just flat out love to fight. They just love violence. They love hitting people and not getting arrested. You know, and,
right.
And then I think you have, and I think it might've been like maybe more in the earlier days where it was a lot of guys from different disciplines and some guys that, you know, like the tanks and stuff that just like to fight and scrap and tough dudes. And, and it was, it was the tough man era too, right? Remember the tough man contest was always on TV back then too.
Oh, yeah.
So that whole era, it was like, oh, this is just, you know, it's just who's ever tougher. But then as you saw that, you know, you saw jiu-jitsu, you saw everything kind of, and then everyone started to get good at it and everyone like train at it to where everyone's just a complete hybrid fighter. Like everyone can fight from any position in the cage. Now I think you're seeing like people that they not necessarily, I think everyone has to have, and Paul, you mean, obviously you've competed at the highest levels, man. So you gotta know, but I think everyone has to have something inside them that motivates them to want to be able to go in there to compete in hand-to-hand combat. You know, whether that's something they want to try to prove to something, whether it's like, you know, prove it to their father or prove it to whoever, there's something, or, you know, I think you also have a lot of people that, you know, you've seen them, they've just had like really high level, like Olympic experience or whatever, and they get in there and you can see a difference in them. Like they don't have that in them. They don't have that, like that fire in their belly. Like, you know what I mean? That, like that reason they're just there,
right?
Because they're like really athletic. They're real athletic and like they can do it, but they don't have that dog in them. So
right.
Yeah, I don't even know if that answers the question at all, man.
I think you did real well, because it's not an easy question to answer. It's a very complex issue. I think you gave a lot of good insight into that, because I've experienced it, and I feel what you're saying is right on target. It's definitely right on target.
Yeah, like a dude could be like an all-American wrestler, and he's whatever, and he'll get you, and he'll dump you, and he's down, but like as soon as you start to like punch him in the mouth and elbow him, and he's like, what the I don't want to do
right.
that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Are we talking about Brock Lesnar? No, I'm joking.
What?
No, you know what's a great example? A great example of that is when I fought Joe Barrera, who was a world-class jiu-jitsu guy, great, great competitor. But when he was expected to be like the next Gracie. and I connected with him with a real big punch, and you know, almost put his head down through the ground. He popped up and he was no longer interested in the fight. And I just chased him around the rest of it because, you know, it was not jujitsu. It was definitely not jujitsu. Right. Getting hit was different than jujitsu. Yeah. But that doesn't take anything away from his ability as a master jujitsu practitioner. It's just he doesn't getting punched. You know?
Yeah, no, and some guys that, like, yeah, that's the thing, man. It's like I tell people all the time, like, so I've never fought. I had like one exhibition boxing match or whatever, and I had a couple grappling, you know, submission grappling matches, and then done some gi jiu-jitsu tournaments this past year as I've gotten back into it. And it's a special type of person that can stand there across from someone and punch them in the face, and then they punch them in the face, and then God forbid, you're talking about kicks and elbows and knees, and for someone to go, hey, wait a second, what are we doing here, man? This is, come on now, let's go get a beer. But
we're all a little crazy. Some managers
like the Edgar's fight. That was an absolute war. I mean, that's what the sport is. You know, I love that aspect. I mean, that's what we had when we had Peter James, Stananek on. You know, it's just, he wants to bring that raw. He just, let's just do this, you know, and that's what I love about this sport. You know, and you look at the Edgar fight, and I don't know, man. To me, that should have been a draw, because when two guys go out there and give it every bit of them, you know, I mean, how can you pick a winner after a fight like that? I mean, I know you got to, but heart-wise, both of them went and they gave 100%. You know, and that's what is great about life. You know, Christian, I know you got to get – I want to ask you one more question. Well, not so much a question, as much as a message. Because you're a really compassionate dude. You've got lives that you say, you know, check in with Christian, or, you know, you do your little motivational videos and things like that. What kind of statement can you give the world on hope, compassion, and unity in these dark times before we kind of let you go here, brother?
Wow, man. Well, thank you. Yeah, I do like to jump on the Facebook Live and stuff, and you know, engage with people, and I appreciate the platform. That's such a profound question, but I really think at the end of the day, it comes down to, you gotta care for the next man, next woman, and care for people. You know, you have to want the best for your fellow person. Yeah, you got to be willing to keep an open mind. I always tell my kids, like, you know, life's a journey, and you have a choice. You can go through it, you know, helping people or harming people, and you're not always going to make the best decisions, and sometimes you're going to make decisions that harm people, whether it was your intention or not. But when you get to the end of your journey, just try to rack up more instances of helping versus harming, and I think you'll be happy.
Amen, brother. You know, I don't think you could have said it more better. You know, I sit here as a 56-year-old man with a 34-year-old son and a 5-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, man, God bless you.
Yeah.
I have my first grandson coming in November. Yeah.
That's righteous. That's so righteous. The thing of it is, you know, the main thought of this whole show is just gratitude and just to be grateful for what we have in life and the people that we have close to us. Christian, it was an honor for me to have you on the show again. Next time we'll make it. We'll schedule a little bit further out, because I know your son is injured, and wish him the best for me and Paul, because I know that was a horrific injury that he went through, and I know you're caring for him, and I know you got to be up early in the morning and you're on the East Coast, but you're truly a tremendous guest and a tremendous man. What you've done in this sport, it can't be done again. It can't be duplicated. You know, I think people in life don't tell each other enough how much we appreciate them and respect them and the path or the walk that they've created for others and themselves. You've always demonstrated in high regard your respect for people, and you've always given people opportunities. And for that, my friend, I truly respect you, and I respect your walk. I'm going to hand the mic to you, and if you have anything that you would like to add to the show, any social media sites, or whatever it may be.
Don, I just...
The floor is yours, brother.
Oh, thank you. I want to thank you not just for the kind words right there, but just for everything and for your friendship and just being, you know, being a brother, man. And Paul, it's a pleasure to meet you here on the phone and look forward to, you know, connecting with you a little more, man. And it's really cool because, you know, I haven't seen you, you know, on tape and stuff and on TV. It's an honor, brother, man. So appreciate it. I hope this has been a tough year, obviously, right? I mean, that's the understatement of the whole, you know, forever. But you know, the thing that I've tried to subscribe to this year is you know, the things that are out of my control. I know they always say, you know, don't sweat the things that are out of your control, whatever, but this year I think I'm really, really trying not to. And you know, this year started out with you know, I was sick. I had the COVID, you know what I mean? I had this shit. It was horrible, but, you know, that was good. But like the whole year, huh? I'm sorry.
I'm glad you got through that.
Thank you, man. Yeah,
sorry.
It was crazy. Yeah. Cause that's like a whole nother episode, to be honest with you. But, you know, like, we have to be able to find, we have to, whether we have to find it or whether you have to create it we have to manifest it. Whatever we can do to like create, you know, positive moments this year, you got to do it. You know, you gotta take advantage of it. There were some things that, there was learning opportunities that universities were putting out there for free online courses during the shutdown. And while I was like, you know, quarantining and working from home, I took advantage of that. So I was trying to learn and, you know, using this time to like be more self-aware and introspective and thinking about myself and my life and, you know, what I aspire for the rest of my life in terms of family and things like that. So I'm just trying to flip the script on 2020, you know, as best I can and stay focused and stay positive. And it's hard, man, because it's been a tough year. And, it's been a very tough year for a lot of, you know, people that are very dear to me and have lost a lot of family members and all that stuff, too. So you just, you know, you got to keep pushing forward, man. You got to, it's like you're a running back with the ball and you just got to keep moving your feet. You got to keep moving your knees or else you're going to end up on your ass. And it's just, you know, if I'm going to go down, you're going to have to fucking tackle the shit out of me. That's just the way, that's the way it is.
Well, brother, I'm glad to see you're back practicing jiu-jitsu. Hopefully I'll get rid of my white belt soon. I don't know if Professor J.W. Wright
is the best thing ever, dude.
Yeah.
Niagara Falls, Brazilian jiu-jitsu,
I'm missing my leg, so it kills me. But you guys don't like me because, see, one thing about most people, before I let you go, most people don't realize when you're missing a leg, people think that's a disadvantage.
No, that reality, I think it's an advantage for you.
It is. I get to shove it in your gut. Get to shove it in your ball.
I was just thinking, dude, you're going to go play.
Dirty bastard, you. Dirty bastard.
But, you know, I love jiu-jitsu. I hated it at first. I filmed it. I shot it for years, and I hated it. I was like, I didn't get it. And then one show, J.W. Wright says, you know, because he owns Fuji Sports, Fuji BJJ, and the Respect tournaments, and so much other things. And I asked him, I said, you've accomplished so much. What would you like to see next on the plate of JW Wright? He said, for you to put down the damn microphone, for you to put down the damn camera and put on a gi. And I did, and he choked me out my first session. But you know what? I found a love and respect for jiu-jitsu. And once you get that fever, you can't let it go. So it's an honor to see you back in jiu-jitsu, Christian. And
thanks, man.
So, Paul, don't talk crap about jiu-jitsu practitioners, because we do it for free, homie.
I pay to do it. What the hell?
We pay to do it.
Yeah.
Christian, I think you're an awesome soul, bro, and I can't wait for the next food challenge. You better bring it.
Yeah, man.
I got a new one coming up I'm getting ready to throw out, and y'all better step up your game because I'm stepping up mine. With that being said,
all right,
go
let's
take
do it,
care
man.
Of your
I'm
going to
think up
brother.
Something crazy. All right,
you
brother.
Better. Hey, don't throw no more hamburgers out there like you did that one. That one was straight fire.
I can't guarantee that. Don, thank you, brother.
All right,
Paul,
bro,
thank you,
good
man.
Night.
You too, guys.
Hey, God bless you, bro.
All right.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, you too. Later. Peace.
Peace. Hey, Paul. You know, I forgot his kid was hurt.
Good fun. Good fun.
Yeah. You know, but what did you take away from tonight's show, man? I got to tell you what. Peter, that kid is a beast. I mean.
Yeah.
To have the attitude that he had was tremendous. It's just, you don't see that very much in our sport. You don't see that type of mentality. But when you do, that's why I posed that question to Christian about, you know, style bender and other aspects of the sport. I think that the sport is going to see that in Peter James Stanenek. What are your thoughts, bro?
I agree. His kid's got a great attitude, and I think he's going to do really well. And I think, you know, the main part of your question that I want to address is what did he get to show, and what a political show is, how important family, friends, and support of each other through tough times is at the heart of a good life. And, you know, that's being a good fighter is a small part of having a good life, you know. And it's great to be a good fighter, but it's even better to be a great human being and a good fighter, you know. And we talked some great human beings tonight, and that was exciting.
Yeah, it was kind of a different show tonight, and, you know, it kind of sucks. Like I explained to you, everybody earlier, you know, it's when it's a live show and you have technical difficulties, you know, thank God it wasn't on me tonight, because generally it usually is, and I take the blame for it, but this time it was on the fighter's end, so I'm cool with it. I can skate on that one, but the show must go on. And, you know, Paul, I think it's tremendous that you come on the show with me. You know, we talk away from social media, we're brothers in life, but I want to thank you for what you've given to the sport. You know, people don't realize until they, I guess, go and research what it took for you to compete, what it took for you to make a name for yourself in the sport. You know, as you said earlier, you didn't even know who you were fighting until it was time to fight most of the time. People don't realize that there was no time limits. There was no rounds. Sometimes you fought for 30 minutes straight. You know, and some of these guys talk about, well, I have to get conditioned for 5 rounds. Bro, you had to go 5 or better rounds back in the day. What was it in the mindset of you, Paul, that kept you going? Because I know after 25, 30 minutes of nonstop fighting without gloves and no rules, I would be mush. What was it that kept you inspired and kept you vigorated to going, bro?
Well, it was, you know, kind of funny. The name of the event really was what it was all about. It was the ultimate challenge. It was what, am I that guy I think I am? And as, you know, all those guys, we really think we're hot shit, right? And this gave you a chance to see who you are, really explore what you're capable of. And I don't know if that's healthy all the time, but it sure as hell felt really good. And it all, and also one of the things that I found out after my first fight is how much impact the event, my performance, the other fighters, how much we could bring joy to people, how much excitement we could bring to people. And you know, in the first interview, I won't even try to say his name, I'll be worse than you, but he says, you know, that the people are paying $65, and that's pretty much what they make for a day of work. And, you know, bringing that joy to those people for that amount of money that they're willing to take out of money in, it is wonderful to help anybody have a better day than they did before and have a memory that they can go back on. And when things are tough and they're not enjoying life as much, they can remember and look forward to something that can help them rise above the mundane daily life that most people go through. And that was a big part of my motivation. I really liked that people get a real kick out of it, you know? And that was a big part for me. You know, it comes back to trying to share, you know? And you too, though. I mean, don't ever underestimate what you've done and brought to the sport and what you're currently doing. You're currently helping people share their experience, and that's immeasurable too, bro. So don't sell yourself short. You do amazing things for everybody.
Yeah, I'm just the kind of guy that I'm not better than anybody. You know, my grandfather gave me great values. You and I have both walked on the dark side of life, and we've walked on the bright side of life. But one thing I've always realized is the only time I should ever look down on somebody is when I'm helping them up. And during these trying times in life, I will help my enemy just as much as I would a brother, because that's what's going to make a difference in life, and that's what's going to create a difference in this world. We all need to realize that none of us are no better than the other. The issues that are being perplexed in our country right now, they don't define our country. They don't define what we stand for. But it's great to be able to do shows like this, because it truly shows me that there is great warriors, there are great patriots, and there are people that still truly do love our country. So the message on tonight's show of hope and unity and coming together and taking away from our brothers and our sisters that we've walked in life with is something unique. Paul, you've been in the sport a long time. You've given back. On this final thought of the night, what would you like to say to our country?
I would like to build on what you're saying is we got to come together. We got to see that we need each other, and to get over this virus, we got to have each other's back. We got to respect each other enough to wear our masks. We got to, if somebody needs help, help them. Cause you know what? We all need help some way at some point or another. And that's the only way we're going to make it through. So I agree with you 100%. And family, friends, and support, I think, is what I'd, you know, like to share with everybody out there.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Paul, it's an honor for you. I mean, an honor for you. An honor for me.
It is an honor for me. You're right.
It's getting late. It's getting late. You know me, homie.
I know, bro. I love you, bro. I love you. It's all good.
I love you too, man. But, you know, I'm going to pass the mic to you. If there's anything you want to add to the show before we kind of wrap things up here, homie, the floor is yours.
Well, yeah, if anybody gets a chance, come check out my Instagram page and my Facebook and build a family and build the connections up, and let's keep this thing rolling, man.
Hey, and you know what? We still need to do that one thing. Before I let you go, we still need to do that one thing where I'll give you a night a week on my platform and let you do your own show, and we'll bring that angle that we talked about and get the pull.
Yeah, no, I'm
much more.
Definitely, man. That's I'm definitely chomping the bit to get it going. Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate all your help. You're a class act, bro. And I really appreciate you.
Hey, no problem, brother. I love you, man. God bless you. And you have a good night, homie. I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cut Man for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, One More Round with Mark and Stitch, and last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. On that note, I want to wish everybody a tremendous night. Have a good night. God bless and much love. Appreciate you, Paul. Love you, bro. Have a good night, man.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love.